Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, May 6th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice, absolutely free, on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the application of that tool has helped their lives or asked really, really good questions about how it works and how it can be so effective despite being deceptively simple. You can also go to your App Store, Google Play or Apple App Store, and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because that frequently leads to comments or questions, answers, testimonials. If you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, it will put a little question mark by your phone number or the icon of a hand these days, and I will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. And we always appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work and this show is to be of service. So how can we be of service? What's on your mind? We're here on a Friday. We are going to continue to read The Way of Mastery with commentary, and we welcome your comments or questions even through that reading process and commentary process. So please remember, if something comes up while you're listening and you have a question, do us all a favor and press 1 on your phone and ask your question. The weekend is coming, and I just had right as the show was starting, I had somebody send me an email and thank me for the archives of this very show since December. The idea of reading The Way of Mastery with commentary is available on the mindshiftersacademy.org website, and there's a separate page where you can just listen to the audio recording of me reading the lessons 1 through 12, and there is a separate page where every show we've done since January 10th related to this reading of The Way of Mastery with the commentary is listed. And then there's a separate page that says highlights. So I guess there's over 60-some shows right now in the list on the Way of Mastery with commentary page. So there's a highlights page that just has 5 files on it now. So if you want to dip your toe in, you can go to the highlights page. If you want to look at the archives of this show that's been going for over 11 years now, you can go to whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And instead of tapping on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, click on the picture of the microphone, and that will take you to a page where you can get access to the entire history of 11 years of this show. The first 8 years, it was 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, and for the past 3 years, it has been 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. And it's just another one of the resources that Michael and Jeannie Rice make available through their tireless efforts, and they're paying their own money to do this, and they're using their own time and intelligence and money and energy to make this available. And as they like to say from time to time, while they are giving it away for free, they have not figured out a way to do it for nothing. So it's costing them to maintain the website and to pay for the internet show. And so if it's of value to you, you're encouraged to donate. They have a donate button on the website at whyagain.org. And I'll remind people, since we had a support group last night, that on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have a support group that's available through the internet, 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, and it's available absolutely free. And there's a separate page for the info on that on mindshiftersacademy.org website. And last night, uncharacteristically, we didn't listen to a Guy Finley talk, or the last 3 Thursdays we were listening to the watching and listening to the lecture by Ian Lunghold on the Mayan calendar and consciousness. And we've done things with Michael Singer and Byron Katie and Ganga Ji and all kinds of other teachers for an hour, and then spent an hour and a half doing question and answer and or people working through worksheets. And last night, uncharacteristically, it was just the interaction with the people in the group, raising questions and having a discussion for the entire 2.5 hours. So please know that's available as a resource, either for yourself or somebody else that you think might benefit, and pass that information along. For today, as we were reading yesterday, we've been moving through the review, the second time through Lesson 9. And what we did is read through Lesson 9 and then move right ahead and read through Lesson 10. And now we're backing up to read through Lesson 9 and 10 again. And the essence of Lesson 9 that we were working on is that we are creating our reality. And this is just helping us at different levels understand that every time we pour our mind energy into a thought, or the phrase that they use in this lesson, every time we value a certain thought, that begins to create our experience of life and the effects that we will experience tomorrow as these thoughts are energetic expressions and they create ripples of effect. And as they ripple out away from us, they create an impact and they ripple back towards us and they create an impact that we will experience in the future. So just to back up a few paragraphs from where we ended yesterday, it says, the message of this lesson is simple. And despite being so simple, it's very important. This lesson builds on everything we've previously said in these lessons 1 through 8. It begins in lesson 1 where it says, you don't experience anything that is caused by anything outside of you. The exact way it's stated on page 5 is, nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. So it's hit that message several times, and now here we are in lesson 9 coming back to it again. You are a creator. You cannot help but create. The creative force, power of mind energy is always flowing through you. You cannot turn that off. The only choice you have is where you're going to focus it. Are you going to focus it on thoughts of joy and aliveness and peace and gratitude, or anger and fear and bitterness and shame and guilt, or judgment at any level? And so then, because you can't turn it off, the question is, what will you choose to create in each moment? What will you do with your mind energy in each moment? Which thoughts, as they move into and through your awareness, will you choose to give high priority to or choose to value? The text reads, far beyond the thrill, and it's a great thrill to create events or things or objects in the third dimensional reality, but far beyond that is the thrill of creating qualities. Qualities such as peace, unlimitedness, forgiveness, compassion, and wisdom. These too are creations. For you see, compassion does not exist just floating about in the universe. It doesn't exist until you manifest it and cultivate it within your own consciousness. In truth, Christ consciousness cannot be said to exist for you until you create an awareness of it within yourself, until you wake up to the fact that you are connected to the one mind, to the Christ mind, that you are a part of that spark of the divine mind. The text goes on and says, your union with your creator does not even exist for you until you decide to open to the lived experience of it. Now, it exists. You can't be separated from your creator. You can't be separate from the energy of creation that gave rise to you and keeps you in existence and feeds your consciousness and your ability to be consciously aware. There is no ability to be separate from that. However, you can focus on all kinds of things other than that. And in that choice of where to focus, create your experience of life as very different from your conscious awareness of your connection to all of creation. You can create the dream of separation. You can create a hallucination that says you're all alone in a cold, cruel world, etc. The text goes on in the next paragraph and says, nothing can be said to exist for you until you have tasted the lived experience of it. So when you hear people talking about enlightenment, when you hear people talking about union with God or their creator, when you hear people talk about unconditional love, you're invited in this work to stop nodding your head and thinking that you know what these things are, and instead take a breath, the kind that helps soothe the physical system, hold it at the top and slowly exhale, turn the focus inside, and ask yourself, do you abide in a lived experience of these things? And when you do that, when you slow down and turn the focus inside and ask that question honestly, instantly you will know the answer. And if your answer is no, no, I hear people talking about enlightenment. I get a little glimpse of it here and there, I think. I'm not even sure. I don't know what enlightenment is. But I don't know absolutely certainly what it is because I don't feel it deeply and completely in my lived experience day to day, moment to moment. And if that happens, if you reach the awareness that you are not living in direct connection with a lived experience of what it means to be enlightened or to have unconditional love and acceptance and approval, conscious awareness of your connection to your source, then you will know in that next moment that there is something else you have given value to other than being enlightened, being aware of your connection to your source. And you're pouring your mind energy into those other thoughts and those other experiences of life. And that's what you truly value. And this book, this teaching invites us to start questioning, wow, what is it? What in heaven's name could be going on that I think is more important than resting in the conscious awareness of my connection to my source moment to moment? The text goes on and says, we would perceive that there are many in your world who like to walk around as if they are in a state of peace and they wear a smile on their face. Perhaps they carry the Holy Bible in their hand or some other text. They wear some religious icon upon their body to create the appearance of one who's at peace. But inwardly, they are not at peace. When they turn on their television and they watch how the logger has felled yet another tree, inwardly they respond by calling the logger ignorant and stupid or limited. And in that moment, whether they realize it or not, in that moment, they have spoken to the universe the truth that they are choosing to live. The truth that they are choosing to live is, I am not one who wants to know what peace is. I am not one who's interested in forgiveness, in the removal of false perceptions. I am not one who's interested in wisdom, in opening to the flow and asking to be taught by life in each moment. I'm one who is interested in judgment. I'm one who's interested in the high that I feel in my body through the act of judging another person as being less than myself. And whether we realize it or not, that's what we are communicating every time we choose judgment over love and judgment over this process of dismantling false perceptions that's given the word forgiveness as a name. The text goes on and says, in short, it's time to give up the pretense. It's time to begin viewing yourself from the perspective of an absolute, ceaseless, always-on creator. Begin looking at exactly what you are creating in each moment of your experience. Bring the quality of childlike innocence to what you actually experience, not what you tell everybody else you're experiencing. It is time to begin to be honest with the effects of the ripples of the rocks or pebbles or thoughts that you have dropped into the field of your consciousness and given such value to as a great form of play. This text is trying to help us understand that we, and it said this in several different lessons, please wake up and realize that you're here to play in this kingdom. You're here to learn. You're here to dance and sing and have great fun appreciating the flow of life, expressing in, through, as, and around you in each moment. And then it says, for a creator who understands their infinite power to create and who understands that that creative power is going on constantly, and they understand that effects are being generated moment to moment to moment to moment that will indeed be making up their tomorrows. That creator who's awakened to that gladly gives up the energy of denial. That creator turns to look upon every moment of their experience that they might discern what choice they must have made to bring about the effects that they're currently experiencing. So when a bill comes and your body shakes and you go into contraction and worry because there are not enough golden coins in the checkbook to pay for it, the creator who's awakened to this process stops and looks upon all that is being experienced in the field of the body, in the emotional body, and at the thoughts being held in the mind. And then they begin to notice how they are viewing the objects around themselves, the world around them, and in the order to begin to wonder, quote, what thought must I have dropped into the pool of my mind to create the effect of lacking golden coins? And is that a thought that I wish to drop into my mind again and again and again so that I continue to create similar effects in my tomorrows? That questioning is the doorway to wisdom. The book suggests that we choose to stop creating unconsciously and then just walk away and then blame life for what we experience, but instead learn to ceaselessly focus on your creation, learning from what you have created, learning from what comes up in your day-to-day experience, and understand this is the effect of the energies that you have valued in the past. For in this way, you begin the process of dissolving the creation that comes from an unenlightened being, which is what you were, and you begin to build the creation of a Christ here now in this moment. The next section is titled, The Power of Your Thoughts. And the text reads, please never, ever believe that your thoughts are neutral. This text has said earlier that events are neutral, but your thoughts are not. For your thoughts literally are imbued with the power of creation, and they do not create neutrally. That is, every thought reverberates a quality of vibration that spreads out from you. It touches the shores of manifested reality and it comes back to you. That is what you experience as the positive and negative events of your life. Now, next part is so important. The text literally says, please listen carefully to this. This is very true. please listen carefully. At any moment as you go along in your experience, as you experience the reverberation, the coming back of the ripples that you have sent out, in that very moment, you are still free to choose how you experience it. You are not a victim of what you have created in the past. Because in that moment, in each new present moment, you remain perfectly free as you ever were when you've chosen thoughts, when you've valued certain thoughts over others, when you've, quote, dropped this pebble into your consciousness. And then in that moment, you become instantly free to begin creating in a new way the ripples that you will experience in the future. And you will create the way you experience the energy of the past ripples that are going to be moving toward you and that you will need to move through. This is why you are never a victim of anyone's creation, especially your own. It is not that life is so complex that you have created all of these momentums and now you're stuck with them. In any moment that you wake up and see the truth of your experience, your existence, your consciousness, your power of creation, any moment that you wake up and you get it, see it clearly, you can stop reacting as if you are a victim and merely look at the ripples of energy coming back to you, manifesting in your life that you've sent out away from yourself as they come back to you. And you can say, quote, wow, this has come into my field of awareness and experience as an awesome mystery. This means that I'm a very powerful being. Therefore, I will look lovingly upon this ripple, upon this life experience, upon this moment, upon these energies. Yes, I know it needs to play itself out, and as it does so, I'm going to be wise enough to see the transparency of it, to see the lack of effect that it really has on my true nature. It does not change who I am. It doesn't add anything of value to my life. It doesn't take anything of value from my life. It's merely an experience called life passing through the field of my awareness. If I look lovingly upon it, if I embrace it, I can transmute it and therefore already be engaged in the process of creating a whole different kind of vibrational ripple that will create my experience tomorrow. Close quotes. That means that while the power of your thoughts is not neutral, the events called the effects of those thoughts can either be neutral or not neutral depending upon how you choose to use the very primary power of awareness, which is a creative force. We are seeking to share with you how infinitely free you are. There are many in your world that teach this illusory doctrine of what is called karma. And they teach it in a way that says, what you send out now, you must experience sooner or later. And how you experience it is directly related to the quality of the ripples you send out. Teaching wants you to know that is not true. That would make you a victim. This text says many different ways, many times over, you are never a victim of the world you see. The text goes on and says, if you are made in the image of your Creator, and I assure you that you are, you are not a victim of the world you see. Full stop. you cannot in reality be victimized by anyone or anything at any time, because your reality is that you are made in the image of your Creator. If you could truly be victimized, it would mean that the Creator creates unlike herself. Think about it. Does a salmon come from an oak tree? Does a nebula come out of the womb of a woman? Does a raspberry grow on a grocery store shelf? No. Like begets like. Therefore, why would you ever believe that the Creator, who is but love and unlimited creativity and power, could ever beget something that is small and little and powerless? It does not happen. The Creator cannot be victimized. Therefore, the Creator's creation remains victimless. All events remain neutral. And all that the environmentalist and the logger are doing when they judge one another is using the power of consciousness to momentarily create the belief that they are this and not that. They place a value of their own choosing upon an event of energy that they will call a tree. And by what value they place upon it, they call to themselves the quality of experience that they will have. That is all that is happening. Now, this is such a critical piece. This is so powerful. And there was a powerful demonstration of it in the support group last night. And one of the members was kind enough to share. But what this lesson has said in an earlier segment of this lesson is, whenever we label something, we label it a tree, we label it a frog, we label it a phone, we label it a car, we label someone a lovely person, we label them a narcissist. Whatever we do, when we throw a label on a person or a thing or an experience, instantaneously we call into our experience of life in that moment. Michael Rice would say we activate, we resonate, we activate through the law of resonance. We add energy to every association, every thought, every experience, every judgment we've ever had about a tree, a car, a lovely person, a narcissist, a phone, you know, a tragedy. In the moment when we label something, we call into our experience everything we have ever valued about that label, every experience we've ever had with similar energy patterns or people or events that we have also labeled good, bad, right, wrong, car, tree, narcissist, lovely person, hero, etc. And in each moment when I say, oh, I've lost this, I label a change in the flow of life, and life is just constantly changing. You might notice, any of you who are at a certain age, pick whatever age you are and think about how your body looked 15 or 20 years younger. Even if you're 21 years old, think about how your body looked when you were 1 year old. If you're 20, if you're 40, think about how your body looked when you were 20. The only thing we know is that life keeps moving and changing. So we go through a movement, a flow, a change of experience, of situations, of events, of people in coming and going in our lives, of jobs, etc. And when we do, and they're always happening, they're continually happening, nothing stays the same. The flow of life is called the flow of life for a reason. There's a reason that they say you cannot step in the same river twice. Why? Because the river's not the same and you're not the same. So we go through the movement of creation. We're in this flow, in this river, and all of a sudden we decide to stop and label it a loss or a tragedy or a tremendous success or, you know, a natural disaster. We label the moment and our experience of it. And in that moment, we call into our experience everything we have ever valued in terms of thoughts and emotions and energies regarding that word. So it's important to understand, hey, I mean, what the one of the associations and memories that came up last night was, I was young, relatively young. I was I'd only been a licensed as a psychologist for 3 or 4 or 5 years, something like that, and I was working at a job, and it was 85-95% of my income. I had two jobs going inside. One was a full-time job and one was a part-time evening job. And my full-time job got so negative, so violent, so emotionally distressing that I was starting to have nightmares about it. And then something happened on the job where it just became absolutely clear to me that if I didn't get out of there, it might be the end of my career. It might be the end of my life. And so, in a moment, in a flash, I realized I have to leave. And I left the job that very moment. I didn't wait 2 or 3 days. I literally discharged my responsibilities, went up into the office, called the guy that hired me, and said, I have to leave. I can't even go back on the floor with those high school kids. And the second call I made was to my wife. I said, honey, I love you. I'm sorry. I just gave up 90% of our income. Now, I could label that a tragedy. I could label that a horrible injustice because the people at the job didn't stand up for me or protect me. Or I could label it a powerful transition. I could label it, you know, the nudge I needed from the universe or from God or from light to do what I should have done maybe 6 months before. You know, it was the impetus to get out of that. Many of us have heard the term golden handcuffs, where people are paying us so much for staying in a situation that isn't truly beneficial to us mentally, emotionally, spiritually, it's sometimes even physically, but they're paying us enough money that we think, oh, we can't afford to give this up. And if I labeled it at that time this gift, I would have had an experience of all of the times I felt like I'd been guided and blessed and given a gift. And when I labeled it a tragedy and unjust and, you know, devastating and a big loss, I activated in my life all of the energies and emotions that go with loss. And I started having thoughts about the first job I was fired from because somebody else lied and said that I was doing the bad thing, and I never did the bad thing. But in the moment, it's just the flow of life. And, you know, 5 years later, I look back and I say, man, that was such a good thing to get out of that job. And if this event hadn't happened, I might have stayed. And who knows what other untoward and negative things might have happened if I'd stayed in that abusive environment for another 6 months or 6 years or whatever. But I'm here to tell you, I didn't step back, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, I didn't step back and say, oh, this is a blessing. I felt devastated. I generated a lot of emotions of anger and resentment and hurt and fear. Where in the heck am I going to get the money to support my family? And I called all of it to me in the moment that I labeled this as bad or wrong. And this work, this lesson 9 in the way of mastery, is trying to get us to wake up and recognize each and every one of us have the power to create our experience of life even the next moment after we've labeled something tragic or wrong or unfair. The title of this segment is The Power of Your Thoughts. Please understand the power of your thoughts. They create your experience of life. Please understand the power of the choice of where you focus your mind energy. That's, in truth, what creates your experience of life. From the most mundane situation all the way to people like Nelson Mandela in prison for 20-some years, Roger McGowan on death row in Texas for something he didn't do for 20-some years, and he chooses to study spiritual teachings and to become a bright light of spiritual mentoring for hundreds, if not thousands, of people. While he's living in a six foot by 10 foot cell, actively being abused by the guards in the Texas prison. But he didn't experience it as a tragedy. He experiences as a glorious expression of life. And he says, every moment we have the choice about how we're going to experience life. It comes by how we choose to interpret and respond to the life events. Love is the easy role to play. Hate is the hard role to play. All those kinds of things. I've read them before. From Roger McGowan's, the book that Pierre Pratervan wrote in his interacting with Roger McGowan, titled Messages of Life from Death Row. This lesson, lesson 9, is trying to help us get very clear about the fact that, yes, it is possible for somebody to walk up to us and blame us for something we didn't do and fire us from a job. And in that moment, take all of our money away from us, take away from us our ability to pay for our rent and our food and care for our children. That is possible. That does happen. And yet, in that very moment, what I choose as a thought pattern, as a label for that experience, that's what creates my experience of life, not the event. The event itself is neutral. And I still remember the time I was at one of the first lectures I went to with Dr. Michael Rice. And he was here in town for an entire week of evening workshops. And there were over 50 people sitting in a space that probably should have only had about 40 in it. And we were crammed in there like sardines. And he said, I want to ask you to just, where you're sitting now in your chairs, just think about some of the worst things that have happened in your life. And there were groans going around the room. And he said, it's okay, we're not going to ask you to, you know, do show and tell or, you know, air your dirty laundry. Just think about some of the worst things that have happened in your life and make sure that they're in the past. Pick one, just one. You don't have to tell anybody what it is, but pick one, single it out and think about it, that happened 5 or more years in the past, and make it be something that you had labeled horrible, tragic, disgusting, something that should never happen to anyone. And now raise your hand if you can see how that event has led directly or indirectly to some of the best things in your life today. And to my shock, my hand went up because the thing I was thinking about was very, very bad, in my opinion. And when I experienced it, it was tragic beyond words. And I looked around the room. Every hand in the room went up that I could see. And that was a real shock to my system because, wait a minute, how could some of the best things of my life come directly or indirectly from this thing that I had labeled bad or wrong or tragic or evil? Even one of the best books that I've ever had the privilege of reading and rereading, Pierre Pratervan's The Gentle Art of Blessing, That book was the result of him getting run out of a job, railroaded. He was faced with the choice of doing something unethical or leaving the job. And it was a job that he loved, and he thought it was his life calling, and he went into a spiral of negativity. But that very life event is what was the trigger for him to be moved into the need to create a way to heal himself and to ask to be shown, and that gave rise to the book, The Gentle Art of Blessing. And I guarantee you, if you read the book, you can see very clearly that when it happened, he didn't label it as something lovely and the flow of life and, you know, the miracle of life expressing in form. He didn't label it anything good. And as he labeled it something bad, his life got more and more dark and more depressed. And it wasn't until he changed his thoughts about it that the experience changed dramatically. So last night in the group, we had an experience where one of our members really, really got it, really saw how they were labeling the flow of life in their life right now, the flow of events, and they were labeling it negatively, and instantly they felt flooded. Where minutes before, they were feeling pretty good about the discussion in the group and the things they were learning, and then all of a sudden they shifted their thoughts about it, and they were feeling the weight of depression and a crushing loss. This chapter, this lesson, is trying to wake us up to the fact that we are all doing that every day, all day, every day. What we choose to focus on and pour our mind energy into and value, if those are loving thoughts, we feel loving. If those are angry thoughts, we feel angry. If those are hurt thoughts, we feel hurt. If those are fearful thoughts, we feel afraid and scared. But all events remain neutral. And all that the environmentalist and the logger are doing is using the power of consciousness, just like you and I each have the power of consciousness. And what they're doing is they're using that power of consciousness to momentarily create a belief that they are this and not that. They place a value of their own choosing upon an event of energy that in this case the logger and the environmentalist would call a tree. And by whatever value they place upon it, they call the quality of experience that they will have directly, instantaneously into their awareness. That is all that's happening. The energy that makes up the tree is eternal forever. The energy that makes up you is eternal forever. The energy that makes up the chair you're sitting on is eternal forever. It may change form, but life remains. Therefore, don't lament the passing away of a species, but trust the grand intelligence that gave rise to it in the first place. For that grand intelligence, that creative energy expanding, extending, and flowing is still busy creating even greater universes. This is why loss does not exist outside of the mind that has labeled something as loss and has created the hallucination from the original dream of separation, now another specific hallucination of the experience of loss. The text asks, how does all of this relate to your daily experience? Well, as we move into the lessons that follow, it's going to become very crucial that you have this as a foundation upon which to build. So please understand at different levels. Play with this. Experiment with this. Notice how you feel when you label something as good. How you feel the instant you label something as bad or wrong. This work is inviting us into the present moment awareness, experience, questioning, direct observation, of what we are doing with our mind energy and how powerfully that creates our experience of life. Nothing else creates our experience of life. We're doing it actively, whether we're aware of it or not. The power of creation that is your mind energy is always on. So that's where we're going to stop reading for today. We've got about 8 or 9 minutes left for comments, questions, reflection, answers. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, I will turn on your microphone and announce you by your area code. The invitation is to observe with childlike innocence and playfulness what we are doing with our energies of thought. To wake up, to observe directly, to take the opportunity. The opportunity is always there. Last night in the support group, somebody got lucky and made the choice to step into the realization as it was presented. And we've all got that. If you'd been there in that group, you'd heard that person's tone of voice, you'd be able to know instantly that this was a novel experience. They don't usually see the power of the effects of their choice of a label for a thought. It was powerful because it was different. But it's no different than what each and every one of us are doing every moment of our lives. And again, the fact that we haven't been taught it, the fact that we're not conscious of it, doesn't change the reality of it. Just like, you know, the animals in the forest are living their lives according to the law of gravity, even though they have no words for gravity, even though they have no concept of law. The fact that they're not aware of it doesn't change the way it works or the impact on their lives. Area code 760. You're in the air.
Hey, this is Ann. I'm with the person that you were talking about in your group last night, I think. Day before yesterday, and actually yesterday too, I'm reading in the ancient scriptures. I've never read through the Bible in a year, and this year I finally was able to follow through with my intention. And I found myself judging some awful things that they talk about, and yet listening to, you know, the way of the heart, realizing that judgment is the key, and I think you were alluding to that yesterday, or talking about that yesterday a lot, the key, because friend and I were talking, it just came to me, because if I stay out of judgment, then everything else follows along, you know, then I'm out of gossip, then I'm out of any of the other things that would be upsetting if I just stay out of judgment. So I was judging this things that happened in the Old Testament because they were just gruesome. And yet then I switched over, well, wait a minute, those gruesome things are happening today and I'm labeling them. But I have no idea, you know, where that person was and where they were coming from in the Old Testament. And then I have the same thing today. I have no idea where that person that is doing less than love actions out there, where they're coming from mentally, emotionally, physically. And it's like, okay. So today when you reiterated that all events are neutral, but our thoughts are not neutral, it's like, okay, I got that connection. And how important, like you're saying, how important that is as we move forward. So thank you. Blessings, and I'm complete.
All right. Blessings to you. Thank you for the call and comments. And, you know, part of what you say there is so it's a slightly different way to say what we were just talking about. So thank you for the call, because maybe somebody can hear it just a little bit differently. And maybe it'll get in past their filters or past their craving to be right. You know, Michael Rice is... I've had several people in the past few years talk about maybe we shouldn't talk about the need to be right, because in actuality it's not a need, it's just a desire, or it's a craving, or it's a habit of thought that I've been conditioned to. But if I am placing a very high value on my thoughts about whether or not I'm right, I will be creating a very powerful experience. And that's why in each and every worksheet process, we're asked to cancel our need to be right, ask to be shown something else, a whole different way of looking at, understanding, interpreting, dealing with life as it's unfolding. But as most of us have experienced, the stronger we pour our mind energy into ideas about how we need to be right, and it's not safe to be wrong, or we're going to get punished if we're wrong, the more we absolutely pour our thoughts into that, the more we create an experience that we won't be safe if we let go. And then we generate fear about releasing our thoughts about how we're right and somebody else is wrong. What if I'm not fighting for this, that, or the other thing? What's going to happen if I'm not out here banging the drum about how this is right and that is wrong? And in that moment, in that process, I'm creating all of the tension that I feel. I'm not experiencing upset and fear and pain and loss because of what's happening outside of me. I'm experiencing it because I'm pouring value, my own mind energy value, into a certain pattern of thoughts. And that's the only thing that ever creates my internal experience. So that's what we're being called to step into directly and practice for ourselves, to have the experience that can't come any other way than by our own direct observation. And in that process, learn what is the actual mechanism for creating our experience of life, and then we open ourselves to the myriad potentials of choosing differently whenever we're creating something that we would prefer not to experience. Okay, that's why Diedrich Wolzak says, hey, choose again. Wake up to the actual truth of how I'm creating my experience of life in each moment, and then anytime I'm experiencing something that I would prefer not to experience, make another choice. And that's one of the key lessons that comes out of Dr. Michael Rice has an older video that it's quite old now, it's probably 40 years old, where he talks about the lesson from Course in Miracles called A New Beginning. And that's a part of that lesson, is this reminder that any time we start experiencing something we don't like, we could choose again. So thank you all for being here and listening, and I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a lovely weekend and a great show.
Thanks, you too. Appreciate it. So, welcome everybody to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Friday, May the 6th, 2022. And their call-in number is 563-999-3581. and press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. While we're waiting on Michael to dial in, I'll just say the app has been approved on both Android and iPhone. So get your update. And it should just, if you open up your app section, if you've already got it downloaded, it'll tell you there's an update out there. And you can just click it and put it to use. Making some changes on the website. I actually have Susan Giles. She's helping me to create a different cart that's going to look really, really nice. So I'm excited about that. Probably be a few days before we complete that one. And thank you for listening to pre-recorded shows the last 2 days. We actually had a good trip to Southbury, North Carolina, and my nephew got married, and so we were in attendance for the wedding and then the reception after, and had dinner with both of my brothers, and then yesterday morning had breakfast with my youngest brother. My brother that lives in North Carolina had to go to work, as did his wife. And but I got to spend a little more time with my youngest brother and his wife, and so we enjoyed that. And then Michael and I did a little bit of sightseeing around the historic part of Salisbury, and it was a good couple of days. Beautiful weather, and we needed the space of just getting away and doing something different. So thank you for allowing us to do pre-recorded shows, and I hope you enjoyed it. That was on creating consciously. Part 1 and Part 2. And if you have a question, please raise your hand. The only hand I see up right now is Ann, and I believe that she talked to Dr. Tim. So if you have a question or a comment, please press 1. It puts your hand up, and I know you want to talk to us. We will, let me look at the calendar. Not this Thursday. Yesterday was Thursday. So this coming up Thursday, we will be doing the book club again. We'll do it from here on out unless something happens the second and fourth Thursday of every month. We will be participating in the Global Book Club. You can get that information off the website under either schedule, or you can scroll down to events, either one. I've got it in both places. And then not tomorrow, but next Saturday, we'll be doing our Mind Shifters and Stillpoint Breathing. So if you want to be part of that membership, you can join for 1 month or 3 months or a year. And we have been, those who have joined longer than the 1 month, we've been adding to the Mind Shifters a different section. You know, the one that's on the website has 3 sections with 13 Mind Shifters in each section. And every month we have been adding one more section of 13 more Mind Shifters. So it's gotten up pretty good size right now. I'm not sure. I think we've done 8 or 9 additional sections or additional weeks. Anyway, that's something extra that you get by joining the longer, either the 3 month or the year. And so just look out there and see what's going on. And we're talking to several people. Michael's got a couple possible radio shows lined up with other people or to do programs with them on Facebook. And so watch our schedule if any of that comes about. And I'm going to welcome Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart. I'm delighted everybody's here. We get another opportunity to move forward in this awesome conversation about forgiveness, one that I'm getting more and more excited about all the time. And we had an interesting, as Jeannie said, journey to Salisbury, North Carolina. Kind of a cute little town, at least a downtown area. It was kind of interesting. And one of the things we're getting ready to do with Arya Rain is teach her to play chess. There's a kid's book called Story Chess, which is really well reviewed. So we just got that recently, and we kind of were playing tourists and went into a kind of a flea market sort of place. I guess it would be an upgraded flea market. And there sat this beautiful, huge chessboard, about 2.5 feet by 2.5 feet, a table, with two really nice solid little chairs. And so the squares on the board are about 3 inches by 3 inches, 3 inches square, and big, huge chess pieces. It was just perfect coincidence. And it was cheap. It was a really nice, nice little setup. And so we'll be starting to play chess with our granddaughter, reading the book on story chess, and then getting into playing that game with her. Ordered some checkers for it, as well as big checkers. She's getting into playing more and more games at 3.5. And what a delight. One of the things that happened for me that while we were down there is I engaged in a conversation with a gentleman sitting beside me at the dinner for the newlyweds, sending out a call to Regan and TJ and letting you know that we hold you in our hearts, and we ask our whole community to just extend your love and your support to TJ and Regan as they go forward. And they're both, it was kind of fun when they did their ceremony. They each referred to themselves as nerds as part of their commitment to each other, and how much they enjoyed their nerdiness together, and very innocent, two very innocent young people. She got her associate's degree before she graduated high school. She actually got her associate's degree just this past week, and next week she graduates high school. This is pretty cool, sharp little girl, and nice kids, very innocent, very, very innocent. And so we let them know on the relationship end that we'd be here to support them. But as we were sitting having dinner, there was a gentleman beside me who'd been through quite a bit of churchianity over the years. And there were just so many things that didn't make sense to him. And one of them was the whole idea of fear. It's a conversation about fear and how there's so much fear around churchianity. And how much fear drives our whole culture. How bizarre is that? Especially when you hear the man who sources that teaching speaking quite literally of fear as a demon. You know, when they talk about perfect love casts out fear, two conditions in the mind together create this thing in Aramaic that was called perfect love, and the mind can't produce a fear-based reality. And yet here are these people that are just in fear at every turn. There's fear of this, there's fear of that. It just goes on and on and on. You know, whether it's, the list is endless. We look from a political perspective, and the list is endless. So here are people moving in the direction of supposedly following in the teachings of man who says, I have a purpose. I come to bring you life. Life more abundantly. And if I remember correctly, I think it's 16 times in the New Testament, he says, fear not. Over and over and over. Fear not, fear not. Perfect love casts out fear. And yet, everywhere these minds seem to turn, there's fear. And they think, people who are lost in that demon fear, think that they're afraid of something outside of them. They have no idea how the mind works. I mean, the whole system is set in Aramaic, but have no idea how the mind works. No idea that a mind that's run by fear is a mind that's run by darkness. And no idea that the fear is internal. You know, why does one experience fear? Because there's fear in the mind. And that fear can be projected into literally anything. Oftentimes, it's something that it isn't even current, it's future. Well, it might become this with no idea. That it's an internal process and that it can be removed. So fear, a condition in the mind, can be simply removed through forgiveness. Now, many people would say, well, who do I forgive? You don't forgive anybody. Never forgive anybody for anything. It's a major, major error to forgive anyone for anything. You'll say, well, Michael, what are you talking about? Of course, I've got to have somebody to forgive if I'm going to forgive. No. But, Michael, you're telling us to learn forgiveness. Well, actually, I'm going further than that. I'm saying at every moment, learn to remove the content of your mind that keeps you in this fear state. So remembering that perception is a construct of the mind, if the underlying energy that's moving in the mind is fear, then the fear can be about what might happen, what should have happened, what could have happened, what didn't happen. It can be about a person met or unmet, a fantasy. Oh, I might meet that terrible person that will attack me. No idea that that's a condition that's internal. And on Friday, Julie shared with us some ideas from lesson 121 in the course, Forgiveness is the Key to Happiness. I would offer forgiveness is not only the key to happiness, but forgiveness is a key to joy. And it's important to distinguish between the two. Happiness is a physiological experience that comes from achieving a goal. You know, you look at somebody who does something destructive, and they're happy about it. It's like, how can you do that? Well, it's easy when you understand how the mind works. The mind is designed to achieve, to give you information, the best information it's got, on how to achieve a goal. And to reinforce that, when you achieve a goal, the mind gives you a shot of dopamine, literally a chemical high, as feedback for achieving the goal. And the dopamine has been called our happy powder. People, when they achieve a goal, are happy, even a negative goal. You look at something, you say, how could you be happy about that? Oh, yeah, well, you know, we won the battle and we killed 800,000 people. How could you be happy about that? How is that possible? Well, we won. Well, I put a big question mark beside that word won. But what you did do is achieve the goal, and now you're happy. But where's the joy in that? If you substitute happiness for joy, you're in trouble because you're going to become addicted to things in the world. Joy, on the other hand, comes from living in a state connected to active present love. And you can be in the middle of your muddle, oh, not achieving one goal at all, and still be in total joy because you're connected to love. And so the mind can have its trauma-based thoughts and its fear removed. And forgiveness in Aramaic is a word that describes the removal process. So this lesson that Julie brought up, and she kind of, you know, gave us some pieces of it, but it's the way that it's written is really, I think, quite hilarious. It really describes the ego state of the non-being mind. So I'm going to cover a little more of that. So here's the answer to your search for peace. Here's a key to meaning in a world that seems to make no sense. Here's a way to safety in apparent danger that appear to threaten you at every turn and bring uncertainty to all your hopes of ever finding quietness and peace. Here are all questions answered. Here, the end of uncertainty is assured at last. What does the unforgiving mind do? The unforgiving mind is full of fear. So as I'm sitting talking to this fellow over dinner, he just happened to sit beside me, which, you know, started a conversation. He asked me what I did, said I worked with the ancient Aramaic. He said, oh, well, I'd like to know more. I've been in church all my life, but there's some stuff that just doesn't make sense. So, well, how much fear have you heard coming from the Pope you stand in front of? Well, I mean, isn't that really important? Well, I guess it depends who you want to follow. If you want to follow the demon, you go for the fear. But if you want to follow the man who said, I come to bring you life, you better do something about life. And the man who said over 15 times in his teaching, fear not. And there was a way to eradicate fear. So a mind with fear in it is just, it's confounded. So here's how it's described. The unforgiving mind is full of fear and offers love no room to be itself. No place where it can spread its wings in peace and soar above the turmoil of the world. The unforgiving mind is sad, without hope of respite and release from pain. It suffers and abides in misery, peering about in darkness, seeing not yet certain that the danger is lurking there. Remember, perception is a construct of the mind. And if your mind is creating perceptions based in fear, you want to collapse those perceptions in order to get at the root of them and heal them. You can't have enough power in the outer world to change what's going on inside of you. The unforgiving mind is torn with doubt, confused about itself and all it sees, afraid and angry, weak and blustering, afraid to go ahead, afraid to stay, afraid to wake and afraid to go to sleep, afraid of every sound, yet more afraid of stillness. Why is that? Why? Because fear is located in the mind where it doesn't belong. The unforgiving mind is terrified of darkness, yet more terrified at the approach of light. What can the unforgiving mind perceive but its damnation? What can it behold except the proof that all its sins are real? The unforgiving mind sees no mistakes, but only sins. It looks upon the world with sightless eyes and shrieks as it beholds its own projections arising to attack its miserable parody of life. It wants to live, yet wishes it were dead. It wants forgiveness, but sees no hope. It wants escape, yet it can conceive of none because it sees the sinful everywhere. So when that filter is active, the only quality of perception that the mind can build is a threatening perception. That filter goes hand in hand. Fear creates threat in terms of perceptual constructs. So when fear is active, anything that's looked at, you know, a grain of sand, a flea, anything can be the object of terror in a mind that has unresolved fear. So the unforgiving mind is in despair without the prospect of a future which can offer anything but more despair. Yet it regards its judgment of the world as irreversible and does not see it's condemned itself to this despair. It thinks it cannot change, for what it sees bears witness that its judgment is correct. It does not ask because it thinks it knows. It does not question, certain it is right. Forgiveness is acquired. It is not inherent in the mind, which cannot sin. A sin is an idea you taught yourself. Forgiveness must be learned by you as well, but from a teacher other than yourself, who represents the other self, the capital S self in you, the true being that you are. Through him or her, you learn how to forgive the self you think you made. Now, here we're getting down to what forgiveness is really about. So what does it mean to forgive the self you think you made? Well, if we're functioning out of this fear and anger, hostility-based self, then you recognize that it's not about letting that self off the hook, but rather removing that self from your mind. So you learn how to forgive, that is, remove the self you think you made and let it disappear. So forgiveness disappears content from the mind. If it's fear-based content you're dealing with, forgiveness disappears fear-based content from the mind. If it's hostility you're dealing with, forgiveness disappears whatever the underlying pain is behind the hostility. So you forgive the self you think you made and let it disappear. And thus you return your mind as one to him who is yourself, who can never sin. In other words, there's an aspect of self that is conscious, active, present love. You know, we've asked the question 1,000 times. How many of you have ever held a newborn? Go back to the moment that you held the newborn. And as you tap into and experience that newborn, the truth of who they are as love, certainly different than the self most people think they made, then experiencing that newborn as love, by extension, you can say to yourself, well, is the newborn loving me? No, obviously the newborn is not loving me. So love is not a verb. What is it? The newborn is love. That's the fact of life. And being active present love cannot go into this energy called sin. Remember, the word sin is an Aramaic term for, or archery term that means off the mark, simply means you missed the target. And so as we observe the unforgiving minds around us, of course goes on to say, each unforgiving mind presents you with an opportunity to teach your own how to forgive itself. So how to remove the content. Each one awaits release from hell through you and turns to you imploringly for heaven here and now. The unforgiving mind has no hope. But as you do your work and present yourself, you become their hope. And as its hope, you become your own. The unforgiving mind must learn through your forgiveness that it has been saved from hell. And what is hell? Nothing other than separation, the dimming of the light, the division between who we think we are and the presence of active love. As you teach that, you will learn it. Yet with all your teaching and your learning, will not be of you, but of the teacher who has given you to show the way to you. And remember that the true teacher for each and every one of us is inside of us. It's simply removing the blocks to the awareness of that. This is the work that needs to be done. So this lesson goes on to say, today we practice learning to forgive. If you are willing, you can learn today to take the key to happiness and use it on your own behalf. And this lesson suggests that you do 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening, learning how to give forgiveness and receive forgiveness. The unforgiving mind does not believe that giving and receiving are the same, yet we'll learn today that they are one through practicing forgiveness. So allow yourself to take a deep breath. So the practice in this particular lesson instructs, think of someone you do not like who seems to irritate you or cause you regret. And notice the word there, big, big word, seems. It's all projection. It's all done with smoke and mirrors. So this one who seems to irritate you, seems to cause regret in you if you should meet him or her, one you perhaps actively despise or just try to overlook. Doesn't matter what the form your anger takes. So notice that avoidance is, it's all forms of anger. So close your eyes and see that person in your mind. And just kind of in your mind's eye, look at them. Look for seeing some light in that person. Some little gleam, perhaps, which you've never noticed. Work to find some little spark of brightness shining through the ugly picture that you hold of him or her. Look at this picture, this lesson suggests. This is your practice. So you see a light somewhere within it. And then allow this light to extend until it covers that person and makes the picture beautiful. Look at this changed perception for a while and turn your mind to one you call a friend. And now transfer the light you learned to see around your former quote-unquote enemy to this friend. Allow your perception to show you them as more than friend, for in this light, the true wholeness shows you true being. And in seeing that, you will move into another level of process and remove, in the process of removing hostility and fear. Beware taking actions on a mind. Beware even opening your mouth to say a word based in a mind that's in some form of fear. So seeing this person who's friend through the light that you expanded in the person who was quote-unquote enemy. And then just imagine that light being returned to you. And imagine the person who was enemy, quote-unquote, and friend now merge as one. They unite in blessing you with what you gave. Now are you at one with them and they with you. Now have you been forgiven by yourself. Presence of light in you will begin the dissolution on another level of anything based in fear and hostility. And this is where the forgiveness that you've offered you now, that light coming into you, works to process out everything unlike the truth about you. So the lesson goes on to just caution. Remember throughout the day the role forgiveness in bringing, forgiveness plays in bringing happiness to every unforgiving mind with yours among them. Every hour, tell yourself, forgiveness is the key to happiness. I will awaken from the dream that I am mortal, fallible, and full of error, and know that I am the perfect offspring of the Creator. It's a powerful lesson, and I think it's kind of humorous the way it speaks of the unforgiving mind, you know, afraid to move forward, afraid to move back, afraid of darkness, yet still more afraid of light. And it thinks it's all external, and it never stops to think, gee, I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people, and I'm the only one that was here every time, and this is moving inside of me. Gee, maybe if it's moving inside of me, it's moving inside of me. Maybe it's mine. What a revelation. One that the unforgiving mind rarely can have on its own. It's a powerful lesson. You might want to review it. If you don't have the book, just type into your browser on the internet. You can look at it online. You can actually download a free copy of the book on your phone or your computer. But just type in ACIM, Lesson 121, forgiveness is the key to happiness. And there it will be before you. I think it's brilliant the way that
I'll
it's written,
a direct
the way it
link.
Describes me. Cool. Thank you, sweetie.
I'll put a direct link in the notes for today, too.
Awesome. Fabulous.
And that conversation
hopefully,
with Julie was actually on Tuesday.
Was it Tuesday?
Today's Friday.
Yeah, I guess today is Friday,
yeah,
isn't it? Yeah, that's, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, when you're working in the garden, one day is about the same as the other. Tis true. So thank you, Julie, for bringing that one up. As I was speaking with this gentleman the other night, that lesson kind of came to mind, and it's a powerful one. And I wonder who that might trigger something for. Somebody out there, if I were in your hometown on the local platform at your local library or university or church or prison or whatever, and I just presented that lesson, as I stepped down off the platform, if you were in the audience, would you be walking over to me and saying, well, Michael, what about... So here's the space to come up with your what about. What do you have in mind? What does that stir for you? Does that stir the need for refinement?
We have a hand
support.
Up.
Support. Let's say hello.
I believe it's Susan, 610. You're on the air. Welcome.
Again. Yep.
Hey, young lady. Welcome.
So,
good to hear your voice.
Perfect. Perfect. Welcome home. Great to see the pictures on Facebook. Facebook is fantastic if you can manage some of the less pleasant stuff. Just great.
You mean if you manage the opportunities to learn, it gives you to learn forgiveness? Yes, it does give many opportunities for that, doesn't it?
It does.
But it is a fun place to communicate. I find, you know, a lot of people downplay, they talk down about social media and talk down about phones and, oh, technology. I think it's an awesome thing. I just, you know, I mean, I couldn't start to keep up with the number of people that I get to keep up with in a personal way or with the work or anything else. So I think it's awesome. But I guess if the tool uses you, you may be in trouble, but it is fabulous. And we'll get some pictures up. I just finished this morning, actually just before we left for this trip to Salisbury, we did this, our newest garden space. We divided into three parts and was doing building soil, you know, putting in compost and wood chips and cardboard and leaves and grass and then soil on top of it. So we did two parts of it just before we left and had another third and got that done this morning. So
that's great. So good.
It is. So what's on your mind for
today? Well, the lesson was wonderful. It's wonderful. I have been doing, it's kind of messy how I'm doing these five worksheets because like yesterday I did one with part of one on the radio show with Dr. Tim.
Right.
Because I was
nice.
Getting nowhere with it. And he did a very creative thing. He just said, well, I think your goal is too, it isn't the right goal. It isn't quite there. It won't hurt, but it'll take you longer to get where you need to go. So refining
right.
the goal. Then I got to refining the goal, and then I didn't do the whole thing on the radio show because I could see where it was going. You know, by now, the issues go back to the same series of scenes, and once in a while something augments, but basically it's just going at the same scene,
right.
early scene. So
77
said,
times, 70
this.
Times.
It is so amazing. But I got an image of being a small child backing herself into a closet, which then opened into another closet, which opened into another closet, and so on, until I found the backmost closet, settled down in a, you know, on the floor, knees up, and that's where I was going to stay because that was safe there. But and then I thought, what are all these closets? And then I thought, they're boxes. I'm boxed in. And then I began to think about all the ways that I judge myself so much, so often, in so many circumstances.
Right.
It's as if I boxed myself in. And so I'm just looking at that. And I've had, Michael, it's been a hard few days. I've had a ton of anxiety and depression, fatigue, the whole thing. And yeah. You said it would be a healing crisis. Today, thank goodness, it's lifting a bit. And one thing that I have discovered is the medicine or the healing in work. And you're doing your garden and you're doing your radio shows and you're doing work every day. And
yes.
You know probably how healing it is to be in touch with the present world and the people in the world, whereas if you isolate, you're going into your past and into all kinds of maybe dark spaces, which I was doing. And so I've been teaching this little Pilates class, just a tiny class, three times a week on Zoom. I'm always
right.
So much better on those days because my friends show up. And we work ourselves into a lather and stretch every muscle and bone that we can find. And then we're off and it feels good. So I'm just thinking there is an immediate, indirect healing in physical activity particularly, but work probably in general, but physical activity. That isn't what I wanted to talk about, but only that it seems at this point what I meant to say about the five worksheets is that was my fourth one for yesterday, but that worksheet went
right.
on all day. It just went on all day. I couldn't go to another one because I was just backing into these closets.
Right.
And
how perfect.
What a great metaphor
for what your mind's been doing.
Well, it is.
And what excites me about it?
What?
Is you're getting ready to go and see your grandson, and now you know what to do with him. You know what you're going to have to support him through.
Mm-hmm.
This is
yeah.
it. This is the family dynamic. And I think you're going to find him in one of those back closets. And when you take his hand, because you've been there, and you help him to walk out of the maze, it will be amazing.
I want to do that.
I know. I got you. And I think you've just been taught exactly what it is that your job is. And to create the safety for him to be with that as you've just done for yourself. I mean, people don't go into that depth until there's safety.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly where he is.
Yeah.
He hides in his room all day. If he's not working, he's back
yeah.
in his room.
Yeah. And is that what you used to do?
I don't remember. I don't know, but I had a way of doing it even if I wasn't doing it. I found ways of not being real, of being a clown, my grandfather's clowning that he did. I've become just like my grandfather.
So it sounds like grandfather was your power person.
And it was just one incident. One.
So have you put that incident on a power person worksheet yet from the intensive?
Are you kidding? Yep, I have. I've had
awesome.
Conversations with him. They're not elegant like Magda's at all. They're kind of a mess, but because
but they're
still
there. You're having them.
Yeah. But you know, you just helped me finish that worksheet because that's where the feeling is. I hurt for my grandson so much.
Yeah. Probably about the same level of hurt you perceived that your grandfather was in, that he had no idea how to express or deal with.
Yeah, probably. That's a good idea to think about.
So this is major generational healing. So I'm so excited you're going down to see your grandson.
I'm excited too. I've been scared. It's hard to sleep, but yeah.
Well, remember, fear is a demon. You got to be careful.
I know.
It doesn't control your mind, that you forgive it and allow your mind to be turned over to love. But I almost get this visual of you being able to, you know, almost walk into your grandson's mind with him and just walk back through whatever it is, back into the room that he's hiding in, and being able to, you know, like he doesn't have to take 50 years to do it.
Boy, would that be great. Yeah.
Would that be great? Yes.
So if I could ask the community, whoever's listening, to keep Jacob in the prayers for this week, and Jacob and me, and as we work together in whatever way he will permit, because it's going to be unique. It's going to be his way.
2,000%. 2,000%.
Okay.
And there are places where it's appropriate to say, well, you know, son, I have some experiences that you don't have, and will you trust me to guide you? Because, I mean, you can spend the next 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years trying to figure it out. And are you willing to trust some guidance, you know? And if he'll express trust there to, you know, take his hand, and it might be, you know, I could see you perhaps doing a guided meditation with him while holding his hand and allowing him to go back into those facets of his own mind. And
yeah,
get to the one where the true being can come out and come out from behind it and step safely into a world where love is truly present. And that'll be so transformative for both of you.
Well, you suggested last week that I take my little speaker down, and I'm traveling very lightly, but I'm going to pack it in. It's only about 6 inches by three inches or whatever it is, 6 by 6 by 3.
Perfect.
Tiny. Take it down, and I'm going to. So I wanted to ask a favor too. Now I don't know his work schedule. He works at an ice cream place, and he may be at work by the time you're on the radio show. And I could probably text you. I'll do that. I'll say Jacob is here, and he is within earshot. So,
cool.
You know, talking about the power person. I mean, you could probably talk about any tool and relate it to anything you're teaching, because it comes around and comes around.
Sure.
But I'll let you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Please,
cue me in, and we will definitely do something that will be geared for him. Being geared for him, it will be perfect for the part of every one of us that needs to open to the next level. So I think it's a good plan. I love it.
Okay.
I love it, and I admire and acknowledge the integrity of the work you are doing.
Well, thanks.
It's powerful.
It is. You warned me, and I thought, oh, no, it'll be. Yeah, well, I don't know anything. Okay.
Courageous. Well, and when you think, I mean, if you go back and watch, just imagine the level of pain that your grandfather had to be in to express the way he expressed toward you as a small, small child. And stand in the space of willingness to be willing and able to be shown how to process that level of energy, that level of trauma. I mean, for a man that age to still be in, you know, generally speaking, with age, most people mellow, but to still be in that much hostility and that much fear.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I have had imaginary conversations with him about when he was in that orphanage. And he said from age 12 when I left home, and I was such a little kid, I was the 13th child in a fatherless household, put in an orphanage because my mom was doing laundry but couldn't feed us all. I got to go. And they treated us terribly there, and I was extremely scared and lonely. I mean, he is telling me about, or I'm just imagining, it doesn't matter. You
right.
said it doesn't matter, and that's a wonderful thing that you say, make it up, and it'll be
exactly.
it'll be useful.
Yeah. So, well, and what I've found is that when you get to a certain level where your breath is moving and you're connected, what your mind tells you you're making up is actually just the way you open the channel in your mind to allow the truth to come through.
Yeah. Well, it's hitching up with a lot of the ways that I have chosen to be in my life. I can locate my real self. I think I'm being real now, for instance, but I click into a clown and she shows off because she's trying to be noticed and loved. And of course, I'm aware as my wiser self that this is not attractive and not useful and will lead to nowhere. But I still find her clicking in, going into her act, I call it, going unconscious, going into my act.
And notice that's when there's fear.
Yeah, there is. Or the
that's the unforgiving mind.
Yeah. And the certainty that there's no real love out there. Nobody's going to come through, really. So this is the next best thing. Anyway, yeah, it's been good.
So here's the unforgiving mind.
Okay.
Torn with doubt. Confused about itself and all it sees, afraid and angry, weak and blustering, afraid to go ahead, afraid to stay, afraid to wake and afraid to go to sleep, afraid of every sound, yet more afraid of stillness, terrified of darkness, yet more terrified at the approach of light. What can it perceive but its own damnation? What can it behold except proof that all its sins are real? Sees no mistakes, only sins that deserve condemnation. It looks upon the world with sightless eyes and shrieks as it beholds its own projections rising to attack. And all you need to do, is locate at any given moment that any of that's going on, the goal that's driving it. And oftentimes, you know, tying back in that to recognize or add that second piece to the goal, I want this to be accomplished and then add to it so that I can. And that will take you another step to the deeper goal. Yes.
The Magda Clause. I call that the Magda Clause. I love
it. One of the last I remember when we talked about it on the show, there was a gentleman who was at Heartland for several years. He was the kind of the support team manager at Heartland for 5 or 6 years. And it was David that actually came up with that piece. So,
okay.
And Magda brought it to us. She reminded us of that on the show back a few weeks ago. But just that can take you into that step. It's like, what do I really want to accomplish? There's my goal.
Yeah.
And then
Michael,
to bring, go ahead.
The thought is, this would be hard for me to do because I never cry in front of anybody, but I have the archive of this show. And if my grandson doesn't listen to the show, there I go again. Maybe he'll listen to this.
Go for it. Yay. Absolutely. Absolutely.
How much we love him. And how we know how hurt he was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that it's safe, that there is a place of safety that he can come forward and be heard.
Yeah.
And and instead of being attacked, he's going to be embraced and cherished. That's possible.
You know,
and when we're brought up with a power person who can't give us that experience, it seems like an impossibility because, you know, there was my God and God couldn't do it, so of course nobody else could. And
that's so true.
That power person who was our God wasn't God. And if they had a deficiency, the tendency was to pass it on to us. And it's all false. The whole thing can be collapsed and removed. That's the beauty of it. Now, it maybe isn't going to happen in one shot, but as one starts to chip away at it, that deficiency can be totally and completely dissolved and replaced with the truth of who we are as human beings, as love.
Wow, that's amazing.
He'll get how deeply you care for him and how deeply. And you know, to me, it's a tribute to him, the inspiration that it's been for you to go to the next level of your healing and your work. And when you can just open that to him and model that to him, look, here's what I'm doing, and thank you. You're a big part of my motivation, your desire to be there for him. I mean, that's just profoundly powerful.
I hope
and,
it will.
And, you know, think
him.
Back. Another challenge when I think about it, you know, I think about it in my own life, it's like, how awesome would it have been to have the experience in early life of someone who just really, truly, totally was that space for me, you know? Just to be that for someone. And most people don't even know that's conceivable because of that power person dynamic, especially if the power person had a lot of hostility. Because if the power person had a lot of hostility, the power person had a ton of hurt, and that ton of hurt, especially as a parent, were genetically linked, was passed on to us genetically. And so what they're unable to resolve, it becomes my job now. If I want to be free of it in my life, I'm going to need to resolve what they were not able to resolve.
Right. So true.
And so, to recognize that it doesn't have to be figured out, all it takes is either self or someone else, the role you're willing to play, who'll just really, truly, totally be there as love to embrace him. And whatever comes out of his mind and out of his mouth.
Right.
It's a powerful gift.
Always been true. He has gotten a diagnosis of bipolar 1, but his bipolar swing goes from this creative, lively, sweet, loving fellow to what I would say is his father's rage.
Right.
You know, it's as if he steps into it and he gets a steely look in his eye and you know he's gone and he is scared when he gets there.
Yeah.
And so I don't think
his dad was probably pretty scary.
Oh, terrifying. I'm telling you, even as an adult I was terrified of him. So I can't imagine what the kids felt like.
Well, of course, I know you were never terrified of him or anybody else, but it sounds like perhaps he was able to show you some of your deepest unresolved terror.
Sure did.
Just like your grandfather did. Just
and my
like
mother,
your grandfather did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
So it's a major family dynamic from both sides of the family that he's inherited. So it's not surprising that he's withdrawn the way he has. And, you know, you're there to hold his hand through it. That's awesome. What a gift. I mean, he's got to be able to get how deeply you cherish him and want to honor him.
And his brother, Lukey, I don't have access to him, but Luke fought his father. Jacob really didn't fight. He hid in his room. He went into his closet. Luke fought. And I admire Luke for fighting. because I couldn't fight like that. He tried to confront his father many times, and now he's just not in touch with his father, and he's also self-medicating with alcohol and kind of, you know, doing the best he can. So I'd love to reach him, too, as two older boys. So anyway, thank you so much, Michael.
Well, you know, you have our support every step of the way. Because when you break that one open, when you crack that one for one of those young men or both of them, you can literally change the world. You'll literally open the gateway for every traumatized child to just a little more easily be able to open and heal that energetically, that the energetic gateway has been opened. So
that would be wonderful.
Thank you for your willingness. Thank you for your willingness. Yes. Yeah, there are so many abused children. It's just outrageous. Absolutely outrageous.
At some point, I'd like to talk to you a little more about Ilia Delio. It's a whole different subject, but we were talking about electronics. She gave a talk at a convention my daughter was at. My daughter came home so inflamed with inspiration. She said, we have to welcome these electronics. This is an evolutionary thing. Of course, they can be misused, but it keeps us in touch with each other. Don't bawl out the kids who are online all the time. They're communicating. We're becoming cyborgs. I didn't know what a cyborg was for Star Trek. It's a human
Part machine, part human.
Part machine. Yeah, well, she calls it a cyborg, but she said if it does what it could do, we'll no longer have individual countries. We won't have borders. We will all be for one another. The individual will be there, but receded. It will be the welfare of the community that will come forward again, and we will be more in love than we have been now. That's pretty much it. So I crammed it all into a minute or so. But
awesome. Please send me a link. Send me a link with a name. I'd love to look at it.
Okay, I'll send you her name. And they're just YouTube talks. So
that's great.
I haven't heard much. I just got the summary from my daughter, but she's written some books. And anyway. Yeah, she was churchianity'd right out of the church. And she was a nun, a Catholic nun. Who became a research scientist and a theologian, the way you are, a global theologian. So anyway.
Yeah, I'd love to see some of her stuff. That's awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're down to about the last minute, young lady. So we'll be beaming energy in your direction for every piece of work you can get done before you head down there, and then as you're there. So look forward to supporting you and appreciate you a lot.
Thank you, Michael.
A blessed Mother's Day.
Yes.
Thank you.
Happy,
you too.
Happy Mama and Grandma's Day. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
To all the moms out there and all the men that operate as moms, Happy Mother's Day. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.